Hello and welcome back to The Game's Gone Mad with me, Pete. It's a show where we cover the biggest footballing news and gossip from around the world, meaning today we'll be looking at the Champions League draw and what it means for English teams' prospects, Gareth Southgate and the England young boys, and want the way Neymar edges closer to a PSG exit. Maybe.
The game's gone mad.
As always, I'm joined by Patrick Van Straten and Zach Jalab. Guys, how we doing?
Good. Good, thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
Big week for you, Jalab, the new face of Chelsea TV.
it's all out now. It's been a really good reaction. I appreciate all the nice comments I've received from everyone on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the YouTube comment section. No, it's really good. It's good fun. I mean, to work. This is the closest I could have got to playing for Chelsea. Working for them, so not too bad.
Big boy stuff.
It is. It's really good fun, and hopefully we'll make some like sick content throughout the year.
Yeah. PVS, what about you?
I've done nothing. I'm up to nothing. Like nothing's going on. No, nothing to report.
I mean, fantastic content so far.
I don't know. What do you want me to say, Pete? Look, summer's nearly over. I've been hot as fuck all week.
Oh, what a stupid week it's been. Out. I apologise for the language, but Jesus Christ, I've had some of the worst night's sleep ever this week.
We've got
so
one of those
hot
Dyson fans, right? But we have the windows open as well. And then last night, I was woken up, and I genuinely thought it was like 3 a.m. I was woken up by people shouting, like, from... There's like an area where we can park our cars behind our house, which kind of like backs onto our road and then backs onto the road behind us, I guess. And like there was just some sort of like domestic going on where like
3 a.m.
yeah, like a bunch of Greeks going absolutely berserk, like screaming at each other, and there was a woman screaming through a car window at a man who was just honking his horn for like 15 second blasts, and he did like 4 of them, and everyone around us like was sticking their heads out the window screaming, except all our neighbours were being pussies, so they were all just like, I'll call the police, and Emma was just like, just shut your fucking mouth. It was great. That was a fun time last night. And then when I looked at the clock afterwards, it was five to twelve. Oh. And I was like, I've been asleep for 40 minutes. No wonder I feel absolutely exhausted. So then I barely slept for the rest of the night. So I feel tip top.
The game's gone mad.
Well, on the topic of European clashes, the Champions League.
What a seamless segue. So yes, obviously. The Champions League group stage draw was last night, and it's thrown up some interesting ties. Easiest way to do this, should we just go A to H?
Yeah, let's do it.
And give them a wee bit of a preview and reaction to it. So Group A, interesting enough, two giants of the European game, Real Madrid, PSG, Club Brugge and Galatasaray.
I like PSG's chances for this group, you know.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, I think... Madrid look like a state at the moment. I think they've got 9 out of 28 players in their squad injured, which is not great. Even when all their players are fit, I still think their midfield is a problem. Like, it's super porous. They've got good defensive players, but they've actually had a bad defensive start to the season. Played badly defensively against Celta, played badly defensively against Real Valladolid. I think that will be a problem for them in the Champions League. And fundamentally, I think Tuchel is a better manager than Zidane. Plus, when you look at the players PSG have added this summer, though they have had a ropey start to the season, once Mbappe's fit, and if they keep Neymar, or if they get Ousmane Dembele as part of a deal with Barcelona, they will have a very good attack. And the players they've added this summer make them extremely difficult to play through. They've obviously still got Verratti, but now they've got Idrissa Gueye and Ander Herrera. And trying to attack against Ander Herrera, just again,
oh, no.
We're 34-year-old Modric and a 29-year-old Toni Kroos, who's always been immobile, up against those guys, are just not going to be able to get anywhere. Those guys are both, they cover so much ground, they're both completely competent passers.
But they'll have absolutely no time in the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Like Real Madrid, if they're hoping to build through midfield, are going to be in serious trouble, which means that it's basically going to come down to how good a game someone like Marcelo can have to get them up the pitch. Or if Hazard's back in time, that will help a lot. So they've really got to hope that one of those players can do a job. And I don't know, I just like the look of PSG for this. I think PSG have actually strengthened quite a lot this summer. Even if they lose Neymar, I'm not that bothered. I mean, the real question here is who concedes more goals, Bruges or Galatasaray? I'm pretty certain it's Gala.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was thinking more Bruges. I mean,
I think Bruges are actually alright.
They also signed Wanyama as well. It's not too bad of a signing.
And they still he's at Genk, Sanderberger. But it feels like Bruges have always got talent coming through, right?
True.
They've got a lot of money this summer selling people like Vesely. So, and they sold and didn't Izquierdo come out of Bruges however long ago? So they've got a bunch of money coming in, and it looks like they're quite good at finding talent. So I don't know.
It'll be PSG topping Real Madrid second.
I think it depends on if Neymar leaves. I think if Neymar stays, PSG top.
But I mean, I think if they get Dembele, then PSG top.
Yeah.
I think Dembele obviously isn't exactly the same level as Neymar, but I think he's equally...
He'll actually play.
Good. Yeah, he'll play and play more than like 15 games.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Like Neymar makes them...
It's just a huge attacking output that they would lose.
Yeah, but I think if you did have a Dembele coming in, you'd be okay.
Yeah, I mean that's a necessary replacement. If he goes for something else that doesn't include Dembele, they, in my opinion, Real Madrid top back group.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a bit of a coin flip. But if I had to pick one, I'd go PSG, Madrid, Bruges, Gala.
Yeah, I mean it's
interesting game.
Yeah, that was my prediction. If Neymar stays, I would go PSG, Madrid, Bruges, and Galatasaray. Because it's kind of like two groups in that there's one group going for top 16 qualification, one and two, and then there's the other two going for European Europa League football.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you win your group this season, I think that actually the second place teams are not all that strong. Like Group B is going to have Spurs or Bayern. I would guess Bayern. Group D will have, I imagine, Atleti coming second. Other than that, it's pretty much Group F who are going to throw up somebody super dangerous. You know, you're going to get Dortmund or Inter probably coming out of their second.
Yeah.
I think all of those are fairly beatable for a PSG club. So I think this could be the season, if they win that group, that they go through to the quarterfinals. They've been pretty unlucky. Then again, I could imagine them going through and just playing Spurs or something, and Spurs just destroying them. Because I think Pochettino in over two legs in the Champions League is like that. Actually, we might as well move on to Group B, I guess.
Yeah, so Group B has Spurs, Bayern, Olympiacos and Red Star.
Great away days.
This is the thing. I mean, on paper it looks pretty tough, as you know, Bayern, Spurs, pretty big game. But Spurs have actually come through two incredibly tough groups in the past two seasons. You know what, like last season they topped... Oh no, sorry, two seasons ago they topped the group with Madrid and Dortmund in it. And last season they finished second.
Yeah, they comfortably beat Madrid, who went on to win the Champions League.
I think the group in general... I actually think Bayern will top it. I think Bayern will top it and Spurs will come second. I know it's only been three games, but I feel like watching Spurs isn't the same Spurs as last year, which makes sense. And I think they're going to take a bit of time to gel together with all their players.
They've got a bit of time. Like these fixtures don't start till October, right?
No, I think first one's September. First Champions League games in September.
Okay. But even still, I look at Spurs' squad and I think the path to Spurs being... So Spurs lost to Newcastle the other day, and that's kind of why everybody's going berserk. But I feel like...
But I also thought against Aston Villa, they weren't great either.
I think they were pretty good against Aston Villa. Given how great everyone said Aston Villa were and how bad everyone said Spurs were, Aston Villa created almost nothing and Spurs created a lot. Like, and that's Spurs not being great. So I think that you look at them and you think Spurs' second string couldn't beat Newcastle. That's worrying, right? Because if your second string can't beat a relegation struggler, then you don't functionally have a second string, really.
Yeah, so you're saying there's issues with depth in that squad.
Yeah, but the path for them being better overall is super easy, right? You get Eriksen, you get Ali playing, you get Lo Celso up to full fitness. Mm-hmm. And maybe you bring Vertonghen back in, and suddenly you think, oh, this is actually a fantastic side. Cool. So I think if any two of those guys are fit for this, like if Lo Celso and Eriksen are playing regularly alongside Ndombele, by the time we get to the Champions League games, I think Pochettino is a better manager than Kovac. I think Bayern have added Coutinho, who's great, but I'm not sure he's better than James was for them last season. He'll play more.
I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of struggling to look past Bayern, agreeing with Zach here, and that they've added like Coutinho, Perisic, Pavard, Hernandez. You know, they've made some good wholesale changes in their squad. And Lewandowski, he scored 5 goals in 2 games in the Bundesliga. He's probably like, what, the third best player in the world?
Yeah, but they've scored no goals except for that. He scored 100% of Bayern's goals in the Bundesliga so far.
Yeah, but if he averages 2 a game against Spurs, who cares?
But it also means that if you shut him down, like they might not be able to do anything, short of Coutinho popping one in.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I mean, if they're bringing in players like Coutinho, surely if they shut Lewandowski down, they still have the talent around
them.
That's
it. That's all they've got. Like if you shut Lewandowski down, all they've got is Coutinho. Whereas I think Spurs can hurt you in a lot of different ways. And I still don't see any signs of this Bayern team really, really gelling in a particularly meaningful way. Like last season, they had...
I think they've got the right manager to do it.
No, and last season they had a great defence. They've added some defenders. Okay. Is it likely to improve their defence from last season? Probably not. Maybe in the long term. Mm-hmm. In fact, almost certainly in the long term. But this season, I don't know. Have they improved their attack? Losing James Rodriguez, losing Ribery and all those guys, probably marginally, just because he knew he was going to play and James didn't.
And also just aid of Ribery as well.
But I still just look at them and I think, yeah, if Spurs have everyone fit, Spurs' midfield is going to be some combination of Ndombele, Lo Celso, Eriksen, Ali with Son and Kane in front of them and a really good back line. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think Pochettino does them.
You think Spurs top back group?
Yes. If they didn't, I won't be like stunned.
I also think if I have to bet, I bet Spurs.
I
also think Spurs would lose away to Red Star. People found it very difficult last season.
Liverpool lost 2-0.
We found it very difficult when we played Red Star in the Europa.
They didn't care then. They only care about the Champions League.
former Champions League winners, Red Star.
Liverpool had a very tough game against them, and it's not an easy place to go.
I just see
Bayern doing it. I just think Lewandowski seems to be getting better every year, and he's like 31 now. And who's the youngster they've signed in midfield from Gladbach?
Cuisance.
I reckon he might have a nice little...
Cuisance is a really good player.
Yeah, he might have a good little season. Especially with... Well, how old's Martinez now?
30. He's going to be 31 next week.
Jesus. I mean, there's definitely some minutes there for him to play and take over. Though he's also like versatile as well. He can play more forward too.
Well, and they've got Kimmich. And they've got, you know, Thiago, Goretzka, Tolisso.
Kingsley's still there, isn't he?
Yeah, Kingsley Coman and Gnabry. You imagine if they play some sort of 4-2-3-1. If they do that, though, I'd probably play three at the back given the defenders they've brought in. If they play some sort of 4-2-3-1, then you assume it'll be Coutinho in the 10. With Coman and Gnabry, or they might have to play Coutinho off the left. I have no idea really what they're going to do this season. Whereas I know what Spurs will be. When Spurs are good, I know what Spurs look like when Spurs are good. And I think that they're perfectly capable of being that within a couple of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if they're that against Arsenal on Sunday.
But recently they're always getting these injuries. All the top players are always picking up. Dele Alli's picked up an injury. Harry Kane picked up an injury. Dele Alli still has the injury. Harry Kane's picked up several injuries over the past couple of seasons. Hmm. Their defenders pick up injuries. Like, they, for a club that I actually don't think we talk about enough, they do pick up a lot of injuries.
Yeah, because like they work super hard.
Exactly. And so for the hope that come September and October that they're going to have all their players, it's probably unlikely.
But if Ali's injured...
Ndombele's already injured.
But if Ali's injured, they could still have a Lo Celso, Ndombele and Eriksen midfield. Whereas if Lewandowski gets injured for Bayern, for instance, then suddenly you think...
That does make sense. But I think Bayern...
Again, the same argument there is if Harry Kane gets injured, you've got Son.
I'd rather have Son playing up front, though, with that midfield support than have a Lewandowski-less Bayern.
Who even is their second... I guess Gnabry goes up front, right?
Jan Fiete up, who's like a 19-year-old. But they haven't got an out-and-out centre-forward other than that. Jesus.
But yeah, Bayern's tactics are very clear in that it's all their eggs in Lewandowski's basket.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Because he's fantastic.
And his fitness record is actually really, really good. But
were they unlucky against Liverpool last year?
No.
I'm trying to remember.
No, not really.
Yeah, but I think his group's kind of similar to Group A in that it's a bit of a toss-up for top two, and then the bottom two are just battling to stay in European football.
Yeah, very. But I'd go Red Star over Olympiacos.
Yeah, I would agree. Moving on to Group C, and Man City, in search for their first ever European title, got a pretty easy group with Shakhtar, Zagreb, and new boys, Atalanta.
I think it's fine. I don't agree as well with people being like, Man City keep getting easy groups. Like, they don't keep getting easy groups. Like, it's not that. Like, I'm pretty sure if you go back over like just about 7 years ago, they kept getting Bayern Munich. Yeah.
Didn't they have a Real Madrid and something year? Like, they had a really rough season.
Maybe the past two seasons they've got easy groups, but also
they're better.
This is the third consecutive season they've drawn Shakhtar.
I know, but like it's Man United and Chelsea who tend to get easy groups.
Yeah, you know, United used to get filthy easy groups and them up.
You get like the guys who came second in Sweden or something. Yeah. I mean, City are obviously going to win this group.
Yeah.
Atalanta, you imagine, will come second.
Yeah.
Then Shakhtar, then Zagreb. But I mean, I think Atalanta City could be really interesting because the other day, Rodri clearly hasn't bedded in yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they look porous defensively. Like against Bournemouth, they gave up over two expected goals against. So you look at the game and you think that's a comfortable City win, but they were just getting attacked straight through the middle again and again and again and again. And we haven't seen that in the Fernandinho time, like at Man City. And so Rodri, I love Rodri. Rodri's a great player. He's obviously going to be good. But right now, it seems like they are... Fernandinho hasn't been playing despite those problems.
Yeah.
So it feels like they're saying, right, okay, we're going to have to suffer some short-term pain in order to move on from Fernandinho.
Yeah, because this was like the root of a lot of their problems, that Fernandinho role, when he was gone, or when he was injured and they didn't have a suitable replacement. They were playing like Gundogan in there.
Yeah.
They would look so much more vulnerable.
And you do, but you worry then, don't you? Because if you're playing against Atalanta, who had the best attack in Serie A last season, a really good attack, then you think, okay, well, if they haven't resolved these issues by the time they go up against Atalanta, there could be a chance of an upset, but I'd still put my money on.
But this thing, even if there is a chance of an upset, it's a one-off one game, which won't change the group. You know, City are still going to top the group. I think Atlanta are coming second, and then probably Shakhtar and Zagreb.
Yes, agreed.
Zagreb
might concede like 16 goals. Like, honestly,
as groups go, that one's probably the most foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
In my eyes. In Group D, we've got Juve, Atleti, Leverkusen and Lokomotiv Moscow.
I like this group. I like this group a lot. There's going to be some really tasty games in here.
Yeah.
Atletico Juve be great to watch. Yeah. Juve, Leverkusen.
Would it be great to watch? I suppose now Juve are more attacking. Yeah. Juve are going to be attacking this season.
Exactly. So essentially attack versus defence.
Same
happens.
With Leverkusen, Atleti.
Yeah. And then even Atleti, Leverkusen, attack versus attack. See what happens.
Oh my god, this could be... I don't know, this group looks all over the place.
Juve Leverkusen could be 5-4.
It's a really weird group in that I honestly don't know what's going to come out of it. It could be absolutely terrible, it could be unbelievable.
Yeah.
It could be everything in between.
Atleti used to always play Leverkusen, their games were absolutely dreadful to watch. They just pressed each other out of existence. But now, Atleti, they said they were going to attack more. They have not done that so far this season. They're averaging like 5.5 shots a game. João Felix, everyone's going berserk. He's taking under 1.5 shots a game. He's creating 0.5 chances a game.
But he's not make someone.
Well, they're good chances, though, to be fair. Yeah. Like, their shot quality is great. So he's got like 0.7 expected goals and assists per 90 and a couple of dribbles. So don't get me wrong, he looks fun, but I don't know if I have faith in Atleti to be able to create a lot of good shots. And if they're relying on just creating good shots rather than lots of shots, I think Juve's defenders will just stop them doing that. So Juve's squad looks super, super deep.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like really strong.
Filthily deep.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think bringing in Ramsey and Rabiot on a free, absolute worldy business for them.
Bananas. And then De Ligt as well.
Yeah.
Well, so deep, they're already trying to get rid of one of their defenders that they brought in. Yeah. Demiral.
They've sent two of them back out on loan, and now they're selling Demiral to Milan. Though.
Which is mental. And absolutely ridiculous.
They're also trying to shift Mandzukic and Dybala.
Well, and
was meant to be going.
I don't think they will shift those guys.
I think they'll stay.
And then their front line is Ronaldo, Higuain, Mandzukic, Bernardeschi, Dybala, Costa. Like Cuadrado as well. That's so many players. Like, so they've got so much talent. Like, don't get me wrong, I would shift a bunch of those players if I could. But like, it does mean that if somebody gets injured, you've got somebody who'll step in with almost no loss of quality.
But like, compare that to the Spurs' argument that their second team can't beat Newcastle. Juve's third team could beat Newcastle.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. You
know, so like, that just shows the difference in depth they have. It's like, it's actually filthy, their squad depth.
I probably go Juve, Atleti, Leverkusen.
Yeah.
But I do think Leverkusen got a really fun attack and they're definitely capable of an upset. Like, Kevin Folland had a really good half season last year. Leon Bailey is obviously great. His dribbling is getting better and better. He's super fast. And so you could imagine him absolutely rinsing Kieran Trippier, for example. So I don't know, like, Leverkusen are capable of doing something. But
can you see them finishing second?
Yeah, I can see
not
it.
Not first.
I don't think they will, but they could.
Who do you think is most likely out of Juve and Atleti to drop out of the top two?
Atleti.
Yeah, I would agree.
Atleti. Whenever you're trying to shit house games 1-0, you're opening the door for shit happening.
Yeah.
Like, if you try and win games 1-0, all they need to do is get like a lucky bounce or a deflection or something. Suddenly you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So a team that creates a lot of chances, I would always prefer instead.
Yeah, I think Juve are just going to outscore loads of teams this year.
Yeah, definitely.
Group E has the defending champions Liverpool alongside Napoli, Salzburg and Genk.
This, I think, is just a really underrated group.
I'm not fussed about this group, to be
honest. Liverpool are going
to
walk this group. Yeah. But after that, I think it's kind of fun. I think Napoli-Salzburg, those will be some of the most fun games because Salzburg are always hilarious. Like, they are genuinely a good team. Like, they are capable of beating Leipzig, which they did last season. Like, they've beaten Napoli, actually, in the Europa. They're a really strong side. They press super well. They've always got a fun attack. They've always got a bunch of new talent. Like Salzburg, unfortunately, they've lost a lot over the last few seasons. Like they've lost Haidara, they lost Samaseku to Hoffenheim. They lost Dabur off to Sevilla. So it depends how well they've replaced those guys. But they've still got guys like Dominik Szoboszlai, who was linked with Arsenal, like Hungarian 19-year-old. So I look at them and I think, okay, you're up against Napoli, who had a horrible defensive start to the season in Serie A. They beat Fiorentina 4-3 away, but they got very lucky to
beat. Yeah, there was an outrageous penalty, wasn't there?
And it was also completely level. When you look at the shots and the chances of the expected goals, it's pretty completely level. So two teams that can attack but care a little bit less about defending, I'm kind of up for that. And Genk as well. Genk are worth watching for talent. Like they've got Sander Berger playing in central midfield there. Like Genk are normally worth watching just because they have like a couple of youngsters, but they're going
to
get pumped.
Yeah, I'm not expecting Genk to do anything in that group.
I think they'll get pumped routinely in that group.
I'm not too sure that Liverpool will walk this as much as you think, because like last season they lost all three away games in the group.
Yeah, but last season it was more of an anomaly. Oh, can't even say the word.
Anomaly?
Yeah, that one. Rather than anything else. Like,
there was, yeah, but, yeah, there was happened three times in the same group.
But they like still got out of the group.
Yeah, I know that, but like they still lost 2-0 away to Belgrade.
Like, but didn't they play Porto as well?
Well, and lost 1-0, I think.
Yeah, well, they got and against Napoli, when they lost 1-0, they did literally... They deserved to lose both the Red Star game and the Napoli game, which was weird. It wasn't like a freak result, right? I don't know. I feel like that's probably...
And the thing is also, Liverpool do not look as good as they did last season from the start of the season.
That is true. Van Dijk especially, I think, has been a bit off.
They look pretty suspect defensively. Awesome. I see them winning this group. Don't get me wrong, but I don't see it being like an absolute landslide.
I don't know. Whatever.
But yeah, for me, Liverpool, Napoli, Salzburg, Genk would be that order. Yeah,
Liverpool, probably. Salzburg, and Napoli, Genk.
I would quite like Salzburg to do it as well, but I do think Napoli
Salzburg
has just got too much talent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think Salzburg would be one for the romantics.
Yeah, the hipsters.
Zero chance that happens.
Group F is probably the closest one we have to a group of death, with Barca, Dortmund, Inter and Prague. Ooh. Lol. Sorry, Prague.
Did you see the guy's face when they were pulled out?
No.
He just started laughing. Yeah, he was like,
can you imagine the money they're going to bring in, though?
Yeah,
like,
true,
they don't
true.
Care. Like the bunts. Yeah, for Slavia Prague.
They're just going to get humiliated. It'd be like BDSM pitch.
To be honest, like, that's a delightful like roster of teams. Like if you're Dortmund, you get to go to Barcelona, Milan and Prague. Like that sounds great. Prague's a lovely city.
Yeah, but if you're Prague, you face the prospect of trying to defend against Messi, Suarez, Neymar and Griezmann.
But test yourself at the top level, see what happens.
Indeed.
I mean, Conte, mate, weirder things like, have grind you. The thing is, you're going to get beaten so many different ways.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get you'll probably just get, like, pumped by Barca and Dortmund, whereas Inter are just going to grind you into dirt. Like, it's going to be a horrible, grindy game where Lukaku scores 7. So, I mean, I don't know. This just... Lukaku against Prague sounds like a barnstormer. But I find this group hard to predict, man. I think Inter could easily knock Dortmund out, you know.
So, yeah,
yeah, 100%. But then again, Dortmund could feasibly win that group. You know, this is the thing.
I know, I have no idea what to make. Dortmund last season were not as good as they looked for like half the season.
They started pretty well this season.
And yeah, but they are really good. That's the thing. And Inter's first 11 is great, and Conte is just a better manager than anybody else in that group.
Yeah, 100%.
So, Inter Barca will be interesting actually, because unless Barca are really inspired and Messi's on one, I could see Inter doing them.
Yeah, and again, they've kind of bolstered their attack with United rejects, Lukaku, and Alexis,
which is good. It's really good. there's still talk that they want to swap Icardi for Dybala, that Juve are interested in.
They're going to end up keeping Dybala. And then come end of October, they might be struggling a little bit. Mauro, what's happening? Heard you feeling better. And then he's in the starting lineup, and everything's moved over by end of November.
I don't know now. They've got so many start forward options, like with Lukaku, Alexis, and Lautaro Martinez. I don't know. It's a lot of forwards. But I actually... Oh, God. It's difficult because Dortmund are capable of just doing a madness.
Yeah.
But I'd probably still go Barca, Inter, Dortmund, Prague.
See, like, I've got down Barca, Dortmund, Inter, Prague. That's what my head's saying. But my heart's kind of saying Inter.
That's so weird. You'd have thought your head would say Inter, but your heart would say Dortmund.
No,
I'm going to go Dortmund win it.
Dortmund win it.
Barca come second, Inter come third.
I mean, I'd be delighted with that.
But the thing is, they're all so feasible.
Yeah.
It's like none of them would shock me.
There's a reality where it happens.
Any configuration would be kind of fun.
I mean, the maddest one is if Prague...
Like, if Prague don't finish bottom.
If Prague manage anything else but bottom, fair play to them.
In terms of fun, we should probably root against Inter getting to the knockout stage, to be honest.
Yeah.
We should probably root for Barca Dortmund, like, getting through, because Dortmund would just be fun in the knockouts.
And also, has
I kind of like this Inter
team. Conte's competition, like... Not really.
He never really had that great a squad, to be fair. Like, I mean, he was trying to get through to the second round of the Champions League with, like, Quagliarella and Matri up front. Like, it was not... Do you remember the days when they were, like, loaning in Anelka and Bentner and stuff?
Jesus,
like,
yes.
That was kind of what they were doing, so I don't really blame him that much. And also, he's just... Again, I think defensive coaches, like, do quite well in knockout.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like with Chelsea, it was a bit iffy.
If you can implement a rear guard tactic well in the knockout stages, you'll probably go far.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I back Conte.
Yeah, this is the thing. I don't know why, but I have a soft spot for this Inter team. No, I can't explain it.
I think you've got a soft spot for Conte. I think it's Conte.
Yeah,
love it.
I can see Alexis being really good as well.
This is the thing. I mean, it would be such like. Define United as a meme club now that Alexis stays at United for a couple of seasons. It's absolutely turd. Goes to Inter on loan. We're still paying most of his wages, and he scores like 10 goals in 14 games.
And you're having to play like Tahith Chong like on the wing or whatever.
Yeah.
Group G is rancid.
Right, who's in Group G? Group G.
It's a group.
Wow. This is a Europa League group at best. Zenit St. Petersburg. Benfica, Lyon and RB Leipzig.
I think this is a cakewalk for Leipzig.
Yeah, 100%. Which is interesting considering Leipzig were in pot 4 and Zenit St. Petersburg were in pot 1.
Jesus Christ.
So like, I think the reason the quality in this group is so low is because two of the best teams in the lower pots got drawn in this group and two of the worst teams in the higher pots got drawn in this. So it's literally just like, I mean, it's reasonably even other than Leipzig. I think Leipzig top this group 100%.
I think it's Leipzig, Lyon, Benfica, Zenit. I mean, Zenit might do something and come third.
Zenit have got some decent players.
I still think Lyon have a chance that they've still got Depay.
Yeah.
They've still got Aouar.
But they have lost Ndombele, Fekir and Mendy.
They've still got like replacements.
Moussa Dembele is there.
Gournay, like he can play.
I've no idea how good Silvinho is as a coach though. That's my concern.
Yeah. True.
Thing, I think like Timo Werner under Nagelsmann could absolutely destroy this group.
And they've started
for 30 mil.
They've started the season as well, like blisteringly well. Like I think I'm still considering having a little bet on Leipzig to win the Bundesliga. the odds are like 20-1, so I feel like it's kind of worth it. But
I feel like that's a bit of a stretch, though.
I don't think there's any reason to think they're worse than Dortmund. That's the thing about them, and they've got a better coach.
Do they have the depth to kind of go with a 38 game season?
I don't know. They were very good last season over 38 games, and I think they've got an upgrading coach, and they've got some guys who they only had like 6 months of last year who will hopefully play the whole season, like Tyler Adams and Haidara. So I think I don't know. It's possible. I'm not saying it's like odds on, but I think if Leipzig won the Bundesliga, I wouldn't be stunned.
Yeah, but they kind of need like Timo Werner to go on an absolute madness this season.
I think
it's perfectly possible. But
I think Timo Werner might hit 25 goals this season.
Like, if they're going to have any chance of winning the league, it's got to be like closer to 30.
I don't know, man.
If he hits 25 and then Paulson gets 15.
Yeah, like they've got a bunch of guys who can contribute. And also when you look at I don't know, the Bundesliga, the goal scoring numbers are a little bit different, right? Because it's fewer games. Like, it's only 34 games instead of 38 games. So if you get 25, like, I think that kind of counts for more. Yeah. But yeah, when you think the Nagelsmann was getting 15, 16 goals out of, like, Ishak Belfodil, then you think, what's he going to do with one of the best young strikers in the world? I don't know. Yeah, Leipzig-Lyon, toss-up, Benfica-Zenit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing Leipzig-Lyon, Benfica-Zenit.
Portuguese clubs are always weirdly slightly better than you think.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't really watch a lot of Ligue 1, to be honest, despite it having a fantastic name, Ligue 1. Group G. Group H. Chelsea, Ajax, Valencia and Lille.
Fun group. A group of teams that are missing their superstars.
Yeah, an interesting group.
De Ligt, De Jong, Hazard.
I think Chelsea win that group still.
Yeah, there's
they're all going to be close games.
I probably agree with you, but I think it's such an unknown, this group.
Anyone could beat anyone in that group. Like, really.
I think it's such an even group.
Chelsea don't have to travel far either. That's so good. That's so good. Like, the furthest we travel is what? Spain?
Yeah.
That is not far at all.
Like, I don't really know how good Ajax are going to be after losing the likes of De Ligt and De Jong.
Yeah. They've still got Ziyech.
Yeah, they've still got good players, but probably those were their two biggest players.
Oh, season. Like, you know, it's there's going to be a downgrade, but the attack should still be pretty good. Because they've still got, like, Ziyech, they've still got Neres.
Sold Dolberg as well, haven't they? I mean, he didn't really contribute yesterday.
Yeah, sold Dolberg, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like,
but again, this is the thing. Chelsea have issues too. I don't know where Chelsea's goals are going to come from.
I think Chelsea are pretty good.
But this thing, right?
Scored two on the weekend.
Yeah, but like, okay, in the last two seasons, Eden Hazard was directly involved in 38% of Chelsea's goals.
But Eden Hazard was our best
38%.
Yeah, but they started the season reasonably well. Like, I mean, yes, they had a bad result against Man United, but like against Norwich the other day, you look at the score and you think, wow, 3-2. Okay, that looks pretty close. And then you look at the fact that they went away to Norwich and Norwich had 6 shots and scored 2 goals. Chelsea had 23 shots and scored 3.
Like, and we should have had a penalty.
Yeah, to go away to a side, even a newly promoted side, and dominate them in that way. Like, Chelsea are pressing high, and don't get me wrong, I don't think Mason Mount is great yet. But I think they'll actually be totally fine. And I think Pulisic bedding in will be a big, big bonus for them. Pulisic looked amazing in pre-season.
I'm just not as positive, because you look at that squad last year and take into the fact that, like, how involved Hazard was in goal scoring. Take him out and look at the squad that they haven't really added that much to, other than Pulisic. This is the thing, you couldn't. But again, that's besides the point. Whether you could or couldn't isn't the issue. The issue is you haven't.
But defensively, I think they'll still be good.
But I'm saying, where are those goals coming from? Where is that huge output coming from?
But I think they're going to be equally shared. Like, people keep saying this. People keep saying this. But I honest to God, think they're just going to be equally shared out. Kovacic this year, like, against Norwich, was stupidly good, and I think he's going to be a lot better this season. Look, we would never be able to replace Hazard.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It's impossible.
Well, especially not with the transfer.
But also, everything went into Hazard. Like, the ball always was going to him. Like, so he was going to be involved in a lot of stuff. Like, it's exactly the same thing as Lewandowski or something. Like, if the ball's always being funneled to that guy, his numbers are going to look huge. But
yeah, it's like Cristiano Ronaldo at Juve.
Well, also, their attack can go down a little bit and still be fine. Like, their attack was really strong under Sarri. So if their attack only gets a bit worse because Pulisic is good, and I do think that, say, having Tammy up front is better than having Higuain up front, then I think that they might not be as good in attack, but they'll be good enough. So I don't think they're going to go far in the Champions League, but I think they'll get out of this group.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually have a bit of an inkling.
Oh, yeah?
I've got a feeling.
What?
In your gut?
I've got a gut feeling.
Where are Chelsea going?
All the way.
Man. All the way.
Oh my All the way God. To lifting the cup.
Is it... Right?
Last time you were managed by a club legend.
Indeed.
Does the fact you've just started working for Chelsea have any bearing on that?
Everything I say now about Chelsea has to be positive.
But yeah, for me, yeah, okay, I totally agree that I can see the goals being shared out, but I want to see it to believe it first, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting as well. Like, a lot of these players, like, especially the young guys, like Tammy last season was playing in the Championship, and now he's going to be jumping to the Champions League. Like, that's such a big jump.
Yeah.
That's such a, I mean, for him as well, it'll be such a an amazing achievement. Again, like, as I think the whole group, everyone can beat each other and everyone can be beaten like quite easily. So I think it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah.
I do think it'll be Chelsea, Ajax, I mean Valencia, Lille. Yeah. I mean, Lille still had Nicolas Pepe. Different ball game.
Lille are good though.
They are. No, they are good. They are.
There's some underrated managers in
but,
this group.
But I mean, that could also swap round. Like Ajax, Lille could possibly. I don't think Lille could go third. Ajax could, you know, go.
I'd happily put Valencia second in this group.
Ahead of Ajax.
Yeah, feasibly. Yeah.
I mean, I have done Chelsea, Ajax, Valencia, Lille. But again, like, that second place is pretty fluid.
Yeah, yeah. But we're all pretty sure that Chelsea will win the group.
Yeah. But looking back at our predictions, every English team finished the top of their group, according to us.
Yeah.
Or are the English teams going to dominate the Champions League like they did last year?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I mean, English teams at the moment are doing great business, playing great football. Arguably, because we've got the best managers in the world, and we've got some of the best players in the world playing for those teams. I mean, Liverpool last season were frightening in some of their games, and the same with City. I think City maybe just have to be better over two legs. It's the kind of thing that they needed to improve on. But also, City were unfortunate as well. They came up against Spurs, who had Mauricio Pochettino, who's ridiculous over two legs, and the season before that. Liverpool?
Yeah, and they got unlucky against Spurs,
and they were unlucky then. Yeah, they did get unlucky against Spurs with some of the calls and everything. So maybe this is their year. Third time lucky, right?
Like, they probably should. They've been the best side in Europe for like the last few years. They should probably win it. Like, but when you're naming like the favourites for the Champions League this year, I think you say like Spurs, Liverpool, City, and then to that you only really add Barcelona, Juventus, and I'd say maybe PSG.
I mean, to be fair, like that's pretty crazy to think if you look back like 5 years ago that three of the top five prospective winners of the Champions League are English.
But I mean, I think English football in general has done a lot to kind of develop themselves. Yeah. Like we've brought in these managers who have more of an attacking philosophy and more of an attractive style of playing football. And also, as we've seen with like the young English guys coming through, like. Finally, after like what was it like 10 maybe 15 years ago, the FA put a lot of money into building these academies and helping get these English kids through, and now we're starting to see the riches of us doing that. Jadon Sancho, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Trent Alexander-Arnold, like all these players who now are playing under these great managers can thrive due to that.
So that's a pretty decent segue into our next section, but before we go on this section, predictions, Champions League winner.
Chelsea.
Of course he was going to say that.
Barcelona.
I'm going to say Juventus.
Sure.
Fair. Yeah, fair enough.
The game's gone mad.
So, Zach just touched on England's quality in youth players, and that moves quite nicely on their secondary topic, which is the England squad, which has been announced. Notable selections are Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Tyrone Mings in, and Kyle Walker out.
Oh, that I didn't realise that. Yeah. Oh,
a fit Kyle Walker is out.
Stayed.
Yeah, so Trippier and Lingard have also managed to keep their spot as well.
Interesting.
That's a weird
Which
one.
Have been probably the most criticised on social media.
Though arguably Trippier plays a more important role, or did play a more important role in Gareth Southgate's squad than Kyle Walker.
He did, but if you look at the squad, you also have Trent Alexander-Arnold, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and Trippier, who, in my opinion, Trippier is the third choice there. So why do you need him?
Maybe he does what Pat's been saying, and he plays Trent midfield.
I'd love that.
Either that, or he plays Wan-Bissaka centre back.
You look at the midfielders. Not a single one of these guys is really defensive, bar maybe Henderson. Rice is there, I suppose. Rice.
Winks every now and again.
I'm not wild about it. It's not great.
Yeah, I mean, well,
the midfield is rank, actually. The more I look at it, it's terrible.
So,
like, finally, Madison's getting a call up, which richly deserved. But the fact Ross Barkley's still in there is an absolute abomination. Like, get anybody in who can play defensive midfield, probably.
Yeah, so the ones who've missed out from injury are John Stones, Eric Dier, Fabian Delph, and Dele Alli.
Okay.
I think it's not that bad, you know. I don't think it's that bad. I mean,
I'd say two of those are nailed on to get in if they're fit, and one would almost certainly get in as well.
Yeah.
Because then you could actually drop Trippier out.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting. Tyrone Mings is actually a good caller. I think he deserves.
I don't think he is at all.
I think he's not that bad. I actually don't think he's that
bad. Yeah, but I feel like that's not necessarily what you should aim for. Not that bad.
But who else? He's been quite good at.
Aston Has he been good? Aston Villa, I think, are third bottom of the Premier League for expected goals conceded so far this season. Everybody said he was great against Spurs. They conceded 30 shots, a ton of good chances. Everybody said he was good in the other two games. No, they conceded a bunch of good chances against Bournemouth as well. Everton had pretty much an open goal that somehow Theo Walcott managed to put out of the stadium. Like, everyone seems to think Mings is great, and I think he looks nice on the ball, but he's part
but he's
of
playing
a,
in it for Aston Villa.
Yeah, like, but so, I mean, yeah, Ben Godfrey is playing for Norwich. Why not call him up? He's 21. He has much more of a chance of getting good than Mings does. Yeah. I'm sorry, but there's a kid who, like, whenever something like this happens, he just sends me a thing and he goes like, "Oh, Mings, still a huge overpay." It's like, he's an overpay regardless. If you pay too much for a player, you pay too much for a player regardless. Yeah. Like, because you could have got him for less. But in Mings's case, I just don't see the argument that he's been.
But do you know that maybe it's more sort of like over these couple of weeks since it's been he's kind of deserved the place.
Like, I mean, if they've just put him in because, like, well, if Stones were fit, it'd be Stones, yeah, or exactly. Even if Holding were fit, it could be Holding. Like, God, who knows? Gareth Southgate's decisions are absolutely beyond me.
Yeah, I want to see a back three of Harry Maguire, Joe Gomez, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Sorry.
Wait, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is centre back. That's a right centre back.
I want to see Aaron Wan-Bissaka play right centre back.
So who are you playing as your
wing back? A back three of what? Maguire,
Gomez, and Wan-Bissaka.
Why? Why do you want to see that?
I want to see Wan-Bissaka play centre back.
What, and then Chilwell on the left?
Chilwell on the left.
Alexander Arnold on the right. And then your midfield is what?
Declan and Mount.
What?
Right wing is
Mason Sancho. Mount playing centre mid.
Nah, more of the Declan can do more of the defensive work. Mount can push on more. And God, then we've got Raheem Sterling on the left. We've got Harry Kane up top. And we'll stick Sancho on the right. Marcus Rashford's in kind of case if needed.
Disgraceful.
Yeah. I don't know, mate.
Horrible. I think the best shot here is probably a three-man midfield of Rice, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Maddison.
But is Oxlade-Chamberlain fit enough?
He's been called up. I mean, if those guys are fit, that's probably your best midfield, because Oxlade-Chamberlain does work hard defensively, gives you lots of ball progression. Maddison gives you loads of creativity. Rice will defend.
Yeah, it's your most functional midfield.
Yeah, because you could put Harry Winks in. I'm sure people will, like, go on and on about Harry Winks. Harry Winks is a really good volume passer. He's not a great defender. So I think Winks is quite a limited player, whereas Rice at least is going to bomb around, make a lot of defense. So I'd probably do those three, and then I'd do in attack. I don't know about Kane. I'm not sure about Kane at the moment.
I don't think he's fit yet.
If he's not fully fit,
I mean, he hasn't been fit since the World Cup.
I'd think about Sterling, Rashford, Sancho as a front line. I really would.
Yeah,
that's still decent though.
Oh no, it's really good. I think Rashford's had fantastic.
The pace on that would be stupid.
And then really, your only question is, who do you start at right back? Is it Alexander Arnold or Wan-Bissaka? And I'd say it probably depends on how big a team you're playing.
Yeah.
If you're playing against a really strong attacking side, play Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah.
If you're playing against a side you're going to dominate, play Alexander Arnold.
It is a very young squad as well. You know, the average age is 24.5, and that's including a 33-year-old Tom Heaton. So if you take out Tom Heaton, I think their average age is like 24.1.
Yeah, is anyone here near 30?
Tom Heaton's the only one over 30.
I really feel good about the England squad coming into the Euros. There'll be a younger squad than it probably was at the World Cup.
And to be fair,
hopefully Stones is back then.
At the World Cup, England were the third youngest team as well, 26-year-old.
We've got an amazing set of talent, and, like, even this is not mentioning, like, this could be come the Euros. Callum Hudson-Odoi is there, Ruben Loftus-Cheek is there. I'm trying to think of other.
And if you drop Ali Dyer,
guys that aren't Chelsea.
If you drop Ali Dyer and Stones in for, say, Barkley, Mount, and Mings, that starts to look really pretty decent.
To be fair, Mason Mount's been pretty decent so far this season. Three games, two goals.
Yeah, I'm yet to see that much. Yeah. Like, he's also averaging
four shots per 90.
Yeah, he's kind of overperformed what you'd expect him to so far.
It is a very small sample size, admittedly.
So it will be intriguing to see if he can maintain it.
Yeah,
we'll see. The game's gone
mad. So moving on to your headlines of the week, and our first story is the heartbreaking story that Luis Enrique's daughter Hannah has sadly passed away after a 5-month battle with bone cancer, aged just 9. The former Spain and Barcelona manager has paid tribute to his daughter, saying, "You will be the star that guides our family. We will miss you very much, but we will remember you every day of our lives in the hope that in the future we will meet again." Thousands of people have paid tribute on social media and elsewhere, including ones from Lionel Messi, Rafael Nadal, and Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. Obviously, this is just a horrific story.
Yeah, there's not a lot to be said, really, is there? It's just really sad.
I couldn't even imagine it. at
yeah,
it.
I mean, I think it's one of those situations that unless you're in it, there's no way you can ever like think about how how the family are feeling right now. And again, 9 years old, and it was just a 5 month battle with bone cancer. It's pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, all of us here at Football Daily send our thoughts to the family at this horrible time. Our final headline is one that's a bit drawn out, in my opinion, so we probably won't spend that long talking about it. But PSG boss Thomas Tuchel admits Neymar could still leave the club amid Barcelona saga as he confirms the Brazilian will not feature against Mets in tonight's game.
He's gone.
Oh, whatever. I mean,
this just seems to be dragging on far longer than necessary.
Well, they've got I can't wait for this window to end now.
Yeah, it's like Monday coming.
The first window was great. So like the Premier League window was amazing. And then as soon as it ended, Europe has been so boring. It's just been like, will Neymar go or won't he? It's like, I don't... How stupid are Barcelona? Really stupid.
This one, obviously, it's still ongoing. The European window closes on Monday, September 2nd. So they've pretty much got the weekend to sort it out. There are claims from various sources, one being Gillian Balagay, saying that the clubs have agreed that the value of Neymar is around 200 million euros.
Sure.
And the deal offered to Barca, sorry, to PSG, is cash plus Dembele on a season-long loan, Rakitic and Todibo.
How much cash?
This is the thing. That hasn't been...
50, maybe?
If it's 50, though, it'll be Dembele on Dembele a permanent after that season. Because if Dembele doesn't go, okay, Rakitic, I bet they're valuing him at like 40 mil.
100%.
Rakitic is worth 20.
Just based on his age, yeah.
Yeah, and Todibo they paid like 8 for. So let's be generous and assume he's worth 15. Like, okay, where's the value coming from? So Dembele, I could imagine it being a season on loan and then it becomes permanent next year.
Yeah.
So that for... you know, reasons. But then that I'd still say, I won 60 mil.
I would say more.
Because the fact that they're trying to get rid of Dembele after he's barely paid for them suggests that they don't think he's worth 130 they spent. So in that case, I'd be like, let's say we knock his price down to 30 mil to like 100.
Yeah.
100 plus 20 for Rakitic and Todibo and 15 for Todibo. I'm still like 65 mil short of this 200 mil valuation. But I mean, I don't really understand what's going on here. Like, this just sounds like bollocks to me, because then it was kind of, oh, none of the players want to leave. And I could see Rakitic not wanting to leave, and I could maybe even see Todibo not wanting to leave. But I guarantee Dembele would jump at this chance.
Yeah, well, I mean, Gillian Balagay has disagreed with that, and he said that Dembele has made it categorically clear that he does not want to leave for PSG.
Why? He doesn't play. He hates Valverde, and Valverde hates him. They've now brought Griezmann in.
Like, yeah, he's sixth choice.
And also, if they see you as the guy who scuppered the deal to bring back Neymar, it's not going to get better for him. Like, literally, what is he doing there?
But there's 3 days left of the transfer window, so is this happening? Neymar to Barca?
Nah. I don't think it is.
I don't think it's happening either.
I don't think it gets done.
I say it'll happen. Yeah, it'll happen. Sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
We'll find out on Monday.
Okay.
So that's enough football chat for this week. Moving on to our final section, Anything But Football. And the three topics I've selected for you guys this week are: number one, the Queen agrees to suspend Parliament on Prime Minister Boris Johnson's request. Mindhunter returns for season 2, dealing with the BTK killer and the Atlanta child killer. And Liam Hemsworth and Miley Cyrus call it quits.
Damn, she really isn't having a party in the USA.
I like Miley Cyrus, though. I think she's a sweetheart.
Isn't her like aunt?
Her godmother's Dolly Parton.
That's sick.
Oh my god, I love Dolly Parton. My godmother, that's baller.
I'll be honest, I want the Mindhunter one.
I haven't started it yet, but I'm happy to talk about it.
I've only watched, I think, the first two episodes of season 2, but have you seen season 1 of Mindhunter?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I've only watched episode 1 of season 2. Okay, yeah, so it's about the same way.
But again, yeah, it's probably not very good to boil season 2, so we can just talk about Mindhunter in general.
Yeah.
So this season obviously comes back on Netflix, dealing with the BTK killer and Atlanta child killer. I personally loved season 1. What do you guys think?
Fantastic. I'm a massive fan of just serial killers. Yeah. As bad as that sounds.
Season one's good. Season one's good.
Though season one, I had to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it took me a good 4 episodes before I was like, actually,
Season one was a bit slow in terms of like plot progression.
Mm. Yeah.
Which I've noticed in season 2, it's much quicker. I think a lot more stuff happens. I've only watched, like I said, I only watched 2 episodes so far. Mm. But it seems that the plot has progressed quite a bit more in two episodes than it would in season one, which I do like. It's far more, it's more engrossing, not that it wasn't engrossing in the first place, but I think it's just interesting that this like current obsession with serial killers, like every new Netflix series that like pops, probably like 80% of them are about like serial killers or criminals.
But I just think with, as humans in general, we're very big fans of the unknown, and like obviously when things like this happen, especially that like historically, because a lot of these aren't like we've heard of before, but you don't actually know what happens. Whereas when there's something that comes out and it's like that shows you kind of all what happened in the event. So it's like the Ted Bundy stuff. Like, yeah. There's a month or two when everyone's just like talking about Ted Bundy all the time, and I think it's just the fact that we all like what's the first one?
Making a Murderer.
That was one of the first kicked it all off, and everyone
it was bubbling. Serial, Serial, My Favourite Murder, The Last Podcast on the Left. These are like super popular true crime podcasts.
And also attributed to like this current podcast boom. The fact that they grew so rapidly in popularity.
Yeah.
It turned people into podcasts.
And actually it's also like mostly female led. Like, so for instance, like there's also the surge in like amateur detectives, right? So like amateur detectives playing a big part in eventually identifying the East Area Rapist / Golden State Killer. These were pretty much mostly retired women like working on internet message boards to comb through old photos, to go through like maps and stuff. And they ended up identifying the guy partially as well through the data collected by DNA heritage websites, DNA. They were able to eventually identify somebody who was subsequently arrested.
But like it's a legitimate renaissance of like investigative journalism, because that was like dying a death, and then this kind of new podcast era of like let's actually go
so what
take
do
a killer.
And they, are they like
so they kind of like they do all the research and their own like investigative journalism, and then talk you through the scenario and like what's happened and what they're finding and like how they're going about trying to like figure out what happened if it is like an unsolved case.
Yeah, so like Serial was like a case that was kind of unfolding. Like, I mean, the guy was already in prison for it, but they were then like looking over the case. There was another one that came out recently, which was about the Black Dahlia murder, where it was done by two women who are the great grandchildren of a man who was a suspect in the Black Dahlia case, and essentially they've like pretty much determined that he definitely killed the Black Dahlia. So like there's a real kind of like amateur sleuth thing going on. I mean, with Mindhunter it's slightly different. Like there's something a little bit,
he's odd.
There's always going to be something.
The guy.
Yeah.
He's so weird. Like
Jonathan Groff.
Yeah, in my head I'm like he's gonna end up being a serial killer, isn't he?
Yeah, but the thing is, he plays his character so well because if you see him in other things, like he's a stage actor and like whatever, he's completely
he's in the original cast of Hamilton. Yeah, like, he was a million years ago.
He was King George III in Hamilton, in America.
Yeah,
and like this character is so different to anything he's played before.
Good actor,
and it's completely different to like his personality as well.
The character he's playing, is he real?
Yeah,
I think it's loosely based on how the FBI founded the term serial killer.
I think are they not playing like sort of like agglomerations of real people?
Yeah, so it's like a department in the 70s actually was dedicated to this.
Yeah, so it's like if you watch Moneyball, you know, like then there's then like Jonah Hill's character in there is like loosely based on Paul De Podesta, but also like essentially a stand-in for a bunch of guys.
Yeah, and in Chernobyl, the female lead in that was a conglomerate of eight people.
That makes sense, just to make it narratively
streamlined. But I mean, I don't know. The problem is, I don't think you're ever going to get like a fun storyline like that where it's just like, it turns out he's a serial killer, because this is the thing that's slightly unsatisfying about it, which is that it's based on reality. And so like doing like the bind, torture, kill murderer this season, like... obviously having guys like Ed Kemper, and I don't know, you're not going to get a resolution for the cases that are unsolved.
Yeah.
And you know the cases that are solved, they're showing you the killer straight up because they know they can't really like play games with you. Like if you're watching the show about serial killers, you probably know who the killers are.
Yeah.
You probably know the Green River Killer or whoever it might be. So they're not going to solve like Zodiac or something. And in a way, it's never going to be satisfying as a result, because I feel like what you always want from a serial killer story is like loads of like really horrific tales of what this person did, and then eventually you find out who did it. But and so is it ever going to be as satisfying as like the first season of True Detective? You know,
but at the same time, it is immensely engrossing.
Like, have you seen the unsolved tapes on Netflix?
No.
So they're all just cases which are unsolved, and that's like that's what which you really enjoy, because, as you said, like there is no the payoff or the payoff per se isn't actually there because you don't know who's done it.
But I kind of like that in this scenario, in that like it is still unsolved, and you're like wow, like that guy could like,
you know,
still
Atlanta child, the Atlanta child murders, like those were never really fully investigated in lots of ways, because also, you know, there was a real racial component,
yeah,
because it was like black children being killed. So it's interesting they've decided to take that on, because that needs to be more high profile, and actually I think it is being reopened or looked into again in real life. But there's a part of me when I watch Mindhunter that just wants to go and watch The Silence of the Lambs, because The Silence of the Lambs is really good. Like, but I like Mindhunter a lot.
I always after though have to watch a comedy.
What, just to even it out?
Yeah, man. Like, yeah, you're not gonna watch it like in your house on your own.
Yeah, there are times I watch like things like that, and I'm just like, oh my god.
Because it's so heavy, like you can't really binge it that much. I mean, I think I watched two episodes back to back, but after that, it's like pretty intense.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I mean, there's just this weird obsession with serial killers, particularly from my girlfriend, Jess.
Yeah.
In that, like, there's been times I'm genuinely scared that she's going to kill me one day.
I've had a long conversation with her about serial killers.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, when they come up in program, she knows every single one of them. And she's like, what? Do you not know all about the Atlanta child killer? And I was like, no. Mm. Personally, I don't. And like, her GCSE English language oral, whatever, was how to commit the perfect murder.
Jesus Christ.
GCSE.
And she got an A star. So, you know.
You're gone.
I'm screwed.
You're gone. Has she seen How to Get Away with Murder?
I don't know. She might enjoy
that series.
But yeah, I mean, it was nice knowing you.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Mate. Jesus.
Just watch yourself. Just behave yourself.
Please don't kill me. So that's all we have time for on this week's episode. Thank you for listening, but before you go, don't forget to hit the subscribe button, and if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review, and if you didn't enjoy it, just then keep that information to yourself, please.
Send us a 5-star, screenshot it, put it on Twitter, and I might like it. And if you
what do, an incentive.
Pato might follow you.
Wow.
I might just close that account down.
Bye.
Bye.